ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
How long does head-to-head count? Seems like about a week and a half. That and other reactions from the second edition of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee Rankings. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, November 9th, in the wee hours from Madison Square Garden. Reese Davis and David Pollack, as always, on Turn the Page Tuesdays. You might be able to hear crowd noise in the background, Davey, because you just finished an apple. We're sitting beside each other. This is going to be amazing video on the podcast, by the way. And Duke and Kentucky.
I've already changed in 2 seconds. You're still looking like Senator Davis, but that's beside the point.
Well, that's because I have to go do halftime with Duke and Kentucky.
You'd still be in your outfit anyways.
That's true. You were very upset about Michigan being ranked ahead of Michigan State. That was what I referenced in the open.
I don't get it.
I don't either. And head-to-head, I've said this many times, doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all. I'm okay at the end of the season that if you think a team's better. But they have the same record. They have the same resume. The only difference is special teams efficiency. You give an edge to Michigan there. I mean, really? So we're going to eliminate head-to-head in 1 week because of that?
Yeah, I don't get it. I think it has to matter. Playing each other and winning has to matter. It was literally, 2 weeks ago or whatever it is. I don't know. That bothers me. It didn't bother Reese or it didn't bother Joey or Kirk, which is kind of cool because that's what the committee is. The committee's allowed to decide however they want. I don't feel like they'd do this at the end of the season. I don't feel like you'd look at it if the team just played at the end of the year and do it. Maybe they're proving something. Maybe they have something to prove. I don't understand why we would play that game. It should matter because it was close. Michigan State lost to Purdue. Purdue's a really good football team. When they're at their best, they're really good, and they can obviously do the Purdue-iness. It makes no sense to me.
Purdue's ranked now. Purdue has
19, right?
Yeah. Purdue has two wins over teams that were at the time in the top five of the AP poll, or in the case of Michigan State, in the top five of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee rankings. So, the one thing I will say, I do have, I was somewhat reserved some discretion because over the course of the rest of the season, this will sort itself out.
It will.
Because they play Ohio State. And if both Michigan and Michigan State were to win out and both beat Ohio State, which I think is unlikely, but if it were to happen, for this example, Michigan State would have the head-to-head. They would go to the Big Ten championship game. And they would almost certainly move back ahead of Michigan under that situation and under that scenario. They would probably do it the week that they beat Ohio State. So I don't want to, do that whole thing that people do and pound their fist on the table and, say the selection committee doesn't watch and blah, blah, blah. But Gary Barta indicated that even the week of the game, that there was discussion in the room of, Michigan State found a way to win. They deserve credit for that. And they got credit. They were ranked number three. But there was a feeling that maybe Michigan was the more complete football team. Did you feel that way watching?
I mean, they dominated the game most of the game, up by 16 late. It took fourth down conversions and two-point conversions to, to stay in the game. But I also thought Kenneth Walker went nuts, and I felt like he could do that every time they played him. So I think I left with concerns. I didn't buy either one of them going in that they were a top three team or a top four team in the country. But I left there feeling that probably the same exact way. I don't think either one of those teams are going to beat Ohio State down the road. I don't think they have the firepower to do it. But, it's interesting. Another Pac-12 team ranked with Utah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that will matter, because right now you got two independents in the top 14. Mm-hmm. And you got one Pac-12 team in the top 25 until this week now with Utah. So that's good. UTSA ranked, was unranked, obviously, group of five. What else stood out to you?
I think the other thing that stood out to me was Oklahoma not moving, and I thought that was right. I was actually happy to see it because Oklahoma hasn't done anything of note up to this point.
They didn't struggle with their opponent last week like everybody else did.
They didn't because they didn't play, and I was glad they weren't rewarded for not playing because the remainder of their schedule is the sixth most difficult in the nation. They've got Baylor coming up. They have Iowa State, and they have Oklahoma State.
Yep. And then a rematch with one of them.
Yeah. And win all those games, especially if they're undefeated, they're going to be fine. The question becomes what happens if they lose one of them and how do they look and all of that kind of thing. But the other thing that I noted, David, Notre Dame sitting quietly at number nine. With the upheaval that we've seen outside of Georgia, with everybody being very similar and not really able to bring a B game and still blow teams out as like Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State have done the last few years, can't really do that this year. They're not really that level. Notre Dame is sitting there with one loss. I don't think it's crazy that you won't have enough one-loss teams to fill up the four. And Notre Dame might be one of those two one-loss teams, and you're left with a bunch of two-loss teams. Notre Dame could hang around. I don't think they're out of it yet. I know they haven't been terribly impressive.
Michigan is going to play Ohio State, and Michigan State is going to play Ohio State. So those one-loss teams obviously are going to have an opportunity to be ahead of Notre Dame if they win. And now if they beat each other, which could happen.
That's my point. Yeah, that, Penn State in the mix too.
Yeah, that could happen. But you still got an undefeated Oklahoma. If they trip once and run the table, are they still ahead of Notre Dame? But no, it's not out of the realm, dude. And this year, but the problem with Cincinnati being ahead of them is even if they lose, you still beat them head to head. So
right,
obviously it's not a great outlook, but it's something to look at because this college football season is wacky, bro. This is wacky as we've seen. And I don't think this, I think it's going to be like this moving forward more so than it's been in the past. I think there'll be more parity. I think the transfer portal has created that. Like, I think super seniors, people being able to stay, has created that. It's been pretty cool, you know, to watch more parity in college football. Clemson and the ACC aren't even relevant. Mm-hmm. They're not even in this debate. I'd like to see more of the Pac-12 in this debate, you know, to have names and teams to watch. But 60 SEC, you know, Kentucky, boom, they gone. Mississippi State, they gone. Mm-hmm. Those teams that jumped out. But you look at the bottom with Iowa, Purdue, Wisconsin, a lot of Big Ten in the bottom there that boost resumes, mm-hmm. that help resumes. Yeah. So,
and, you know, and I said last week that I didn't understand how Wisconsin and Iowa were ranked, and I didn't have them on my AP top 25 ballot. And this week I did because, I mean, they have improved, or at least Wisconsin has. Iowa sort of, I mean, they are what they are. They got a really good defense and they struggle on offense.
Made a quarterback change
and it helped them at least for 1 week.
Well, I mean, they scored 17 against Northwestern. So,
well, but
here's the thing. I could easily argue with you that Mississippi State's better than Iowa.
Yeah.
I could easily argue with you that Kentucky's better than, even though they turn it over more than a nonprofit, I could still argue with you that they're better than Iowa. I mean, I think Iowa at 20 is aggressive.
Yeah.
If you want to sneak them in the top 25 at the bottom, yeah. So be it, but at 20, not really.
Yeah, that's a product of the fact that they're 7-2, and they deserve credit for that. But you know, those two teams, you know, they're fighting for the Big Ten West. Wisconsin may well wind up after that just abysmal start. They might wind up in the Big Ten championship game.
It's crazy.
So
wait a minute. So head to head matters in every scenario in the top 25 except for Michigan and Michigan State.
Well, you had a couple last week.
Wisconsin is 6-3.
Yeah.
Iowa's 7-2.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's ahead.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
A&M and Bama, obviously, that's not the same resume.
Not the same record. Yeah.
A little different. But Oregon and Ohio State, head-to-head trumps. Obviously, Oklahoma State is over Baylor. That trumps. I don't understand why it trumps, and it makes a difference everywhere except for Michigan and Michigan State.
Well, I think it eventually will, but I think that's the first thing that I've seen from the rankings. Only 2 weeks in, the first thing that I said, that's not really good optics. I understand the big picture of it, but I'm not a fan. It's too short a period of time.
But it also
could be, as I've pointed out several times, 13 people, the methodology that they use, it could just be two people, for instance, reordering those two to give you a different outcome.
Which is what we want.
Yeah.
We want that in the committee. We don't want formulas. That's why we went to this.
Let's turn the page. Games this weekend. So let's go ahead and start. You've got a big one in the Big Ten West after Minnesota sort of face planted last week. Starting there and working our way up, what do you think of Floyd of Rosedale? You like that trophy?
No,
Minnesota. You don't like. You don't. You're not sentimental.
Not a big trophy guy. But my goodness, what happened to Minnesota?
I don't know. Well, they don't have any running back. Well, they do. They actually have a a couple of young running backs, but they've lost a lot of them.
And still, and they got jumped on. Illinois came out the gates, got 14 just like that, and obviously changed the game. Minnesota's not a team that can do that.
Yeah.
They don't roll the M out there and go, that's a W. That's not a team that can do that. And they don't have margins. They don't – by the way, quarterback play, Tanner Morgan, I mean, he had a couple – he had a great year a couple years ago. He has been very – hit or miss, and a lot of bad for them. I would actually, does Iowa's quarterback change make that big of a difference? I would lean Iowa.
Yeah, I only brought that up first because they'll winners eventually, if Iowa can get there, Wisconsin can get there, would face Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State at the other end of it. So I sort of buried the lead. So let's go to the top. I think the game might be getting overlooked just a little bit. And I know you're breaking a tape down on Saturday of the Tennessee offense. It's the 20-year anniversary of they stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose. Well, the was
it shows you I'm old.
It was a
20-year anniversary.
It's what now?
It's 20. I'm getting old.
You were a freshman.
I was a freshman. And by the way, you talk about feeling like you don't belong in the SEC. We go to Knoxville. I'm a freshman playing defensive tackle. And I look on the other side and I see John Henderson and Albert Hainsworth. And I'm like, am I in the right sport? I'm like, one of these are not like the other. I mean, literally, I remember as a freshman, I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is a good thing or not. That those guys don't look like me. But what a crazy, that was a crazy memory. It's a crazy, crazy call by Munson. But I do think Tennessee splits on offense. They split you all the way to the sideline. They play as fast as possible, and they got a quarterback who is a true dual threat guy that can fly. So I'm looking forward to seeing that matchup against Georgia's defense. The problem is when you spread out like that, it puts more emphasis on the trenches, and I don't know if they can hold up and block them. Mm-hmm. But that's why we figure we keep waiting for Georgia to stumble. And it's been it's pretty amazing that – well, I mean, maybe Atlanta sports fan and me – keeps waiting for them to stumble, but it's been pretty amazing. They put together a pretty good run.
Yeah, no doubt.
And this is their last hurdle, by the way.
Yeah, this is.
There isn't another one.
Until they get to the SEC championship game, presumably.
Then you got
Alabama or Texas A&M.
And then you got a mulligan.
It's over.
Like, it's a wrap.
Yeah, so if they get there 12-0, especially if no one else is undefeated or if Cincinnati is the only undefeated team, then Georgia will be in regardless of what happens in the SEC championship game. We've talked about Purdue. I've lauded Purdue, and then I was angry with Purdue and the Purdueiness for not following up the victory.
So where do you fall
against Iowa?
So next week on the podcast, is it going to be Purdueiness, or is it going to be what did I say on the text message? What did I say on the text message I sent to you? Purdueers
get more done. I told you that Purdueers get more done. That was a really good one, by the way.
Is it Purdueers get more done?
I love their difference makers.
They got them.
Karlaftis, David Bell, the quarterback. O'Connell has really been good. And O'Connell, by the way, is a great backstory we'll talk a little bit about on game day Saturday. But the history of following these wins, which they have more of them than anyone as an unranked team against top five opponents. That won't be the situation this week because they're ranked. But historically, when they have won this game, they've followed it with a loss. The last two, not just the last two, there's more, but the last two, they've lost by double digits, you know, which is certainly possible when you play, even if you play well against Ohio State.
But
they're a good pass defense.
Yep.
Could they give Ohio State trouble?
And Ohio State's offense has looked human the last couple of weeks. It's looked very human. Actually, I'm going to do a tape this week. I think Penn State kind of showed a little bit of a blueprint of how to slow them down and how to mix coverages up and change things up, especially bothered them up front in the trenches. Nebraska played great against Ohio State. Nebraska's offense – can we have tryouts, like an open tryout for kickers for Nebraska? Like, I mean, bring in anybody, for goodness sake. I think they're less than 50% now on field goals through for the year. So Ohio State has looked more human when they've played better competition. Purdue's a good football team. So I'm going to keep learning about Ohio State and how great they are.
Okay, let's go. Let's hit a couple more here. Oklahoma-Baylor. Baylor, disappointing loss. Chandler Morris, of TCU, the Oklahoma transfer,
dude,
by the way, he went off
He was fun to watch.
Yeah, he was terrific.
He was exciting.
Yeah, he was a highly touted guy. Chad Morris's son, obviously knows offense well, and understands concepts and played really well against a good Baylor defense. So there had been some feeling in the Baylor camp that they were sort of living on momentum and belief, and they were proud of that, but that maybe they were a little ahead of schedule at that point. Does it come crashing down again on them against Oklahoma this week?
I don't think so. I think Baylor, I know what I'm going to get from Baylor, and what I'm going to get is hard nose. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to be physical. And I think they could do a little bit of what Kansas State and Kansas did from a ball control standpoint. They can run the football, be physical. Now, Gary Bohannon didn't have the turnover bug. The last three games, it's completely changed, and he's turning the football over. But if he can take care of the football, I can't wait to see Caleb Williams in this game too, because against good competition, this is a good defense. This is a physical defense, defense that won't make a lot of mistakes, that will make him play within himself. I think this is a good football game this week.
So do I. And I think that Oklahoma hasn't really proven much. They've proven they play everybody close. Caleb is a really talented guy, but just, you know, before we hand in the Heisman,
Herbie's already done that.
The season.
Herbie's already gave him the Heisman.
No, I mean,
Ford just handed it to him and said, "Here you go."
I do think it's. I'm okay with considering him. I need to see him beat good teams first.
How about a good team?
Yeah, a good
team. Just give
right.
me one.
Agreed.
One good team.
I mean, he's going to have plenty of opportunities.
It's crazy to say, but I don't think Baylor's more talented. I know what I'm going to get from Baylor week in and week out.
Yeah,
I know. I can trust them for what they're going to bring. Oklahoma's been a little bit more up and down.
Okay, let's the SEC West game.
Texas A&M.
What you got in this one? I think A&M is the better team, especially with Ole Miss being beaten up. I think A&M's defense is exceptional.
Really good.
But the playmakers at Ole Miss, the energy of a night game in Vaught-Hemingway, it will be that type of momentum game that could give Ole Miss the chance to win. I think A&M is a significantly more complete team, certainly a much better defensive team. I think A&M should win the game. I think A&M should win the rest of its games. But I think this will be close. And I think this could be, you know, last opportunity for Corral on a really big stage to make some noise in what is a wide-open Heisman.
People don't realize how hard it is to play on the road in tough atmospheres and tough environments. Ole Miss is one of these environments. It'll be loud. It'll be crazy. The communication change. It's just a totally different animal altogether. Ole Miss hasn't proved a lot to us this season. Like, if I'm going to look at the rankings and where they're ranked, I mean, they haven't – like, if you say they're a top 15 team or a top 20 team, I'm like, okay. Like, but they haven't showed me anything. I thought their defense was way improved in the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And they came back. Then Arkansas puts a 50 burger on them, and then they get better again. And so I think their defense is a little bit up and down. Can they stop the ground game of Spiller and A-Chain and company?
I
don't think they can either. I think this is – they have to win a shootout type game. But at home, momentum gives them a chance.
Well, they've played two physical teams. I mean, not just two, but two notably physical teams, and they've gotten stomped. Yeah. I mean, I know the score at Auburn wasn't a stomping. The score at Alabama was. But the score at Auburn wasn't a stomping. Watching that game, I felt like Auburn was stomping them. Did you agree?
Yeah, they were clearly the better team.
Yeah, yeah. How about NC State and Wake Forest? That's going to decide, almost certainly decide, barring major faceplants, it'll decide the Atlantic. NC State, you know, people get upset with you when you joke around, you know, since Clemsoning now means winning big games and taking home championship trophies.
Yep.
We needed a new word. And so we've jokingly said Wolfpacking. I've jokingly said Wolfpacking.
You can say we.
Yeah, we? Okay.
You can say we. I'm okay with that.
So
I don't have feelings.
They
all three of my feelings have already been hurt.
they got upset, understandably so. I get it, because they have, I think the analogy I used before was that they can be out in the ocean. There can be one little tiny riptide disaster and they go find it. You know, that's been their history, like it or not. It's the way it is. I think they beat Wake Forest. I think they finished the deal. And as much as I love Pitt and Kenny Pickett, I sort of think I don't know. Should I give the money back guarantee? Should I just put it all in right now and say NC State's going to win the ACC?
I think you should put the chips in the middle.
The only thing I don't like about it is because it makes me feel like that they, you know, the NC State fans are upset that I'm trying to get on their good side. And I don't really care. I'm in my mid 50s.
You don't care anymore.
I don't care anymore. I mean, I'm going to.
I like that. The Reese that doesn't care anymore.
I'm going to try to be fair. I'm going to try to be nice. I'm going to try to use some discretion and some reserve to look at the big picture of things, but I'm going to have a little fun poking fun at people.
Okay.
Are you
going to slap the table?
Easy. Yes.
The table. Easy. Are we going to slap the table? And are we going to stand on this? Or are we just going to,
money back guarantee? North Carolina State wins the game Saturday.
Guaranteed for your money back.
Oh, not the ACC.
I need to see Saturday.
Jeez. Can we give him some syrup with his waffle, please?
It's not a waffle. That's a flat-out guarantee that they're going to be Wake Forest. Top 10 team last week.
They were, yeah.
They were, and they lost.
North Carolina's still scoring.
My goodness. My goodness.
Wake Forest defense. I can't rock with that defense.
And, you know,
I can't.
To prove the point that sometimes I just want to have a little fun, poke a little fun. You think I really – and I want to win the Superdog competition on game day, sure. You think I really thought Texas was going to beat Iowa State?
No, I don't think you think – they were going to get that monkey off their back.
Exactly, David. there had to be a way to mention
work that in.
That the three-game losing streak at the time, now four, was their AP poll assassin. You know, so you have to – look, that's part of the
entertainment, sweetheart.
It's part of the culture of college football too. Historically, is the the fun little digs, the inside jokes. Katy Perry, who we would love to see again on Saturday, by the way, throwing corn dogs when she makes picks.
She was epic.
Right. So all of that stuff is fun.
100%.
So anyway, so if I'm sorry if you get mad, I understand. I'm glad you get mad because that means you really care about the sport and you really care about your team. Okay.
Oh, you got to go, don't you?
I've got to go in a minute, but we still have the under four timeout, and Seth Greenberg is hoping that I don't come out there in time so we can talk to him. Let's hit real fast. How about Michigan, Penn State?
I think this is going to be sneaky. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I think Penn State should be ranked. They're a team that
– I do too.
One of the committee's criteria that they talked about was injuries. Mm-hmm. I don't think Penn State loses two games if they're healthy. Mm-hmm. I don't – if Clifford's healthy, they're going to beat Illinois. If Clifford's healthy, they're going to beat Iowa. So I'll take one of the two. Like, one of those two, they would have won. I can't guarantee anything. I feel as strongly about that as anything I know in college football. So I think Penn State could easily be ranked. They're at home. They'll have the momentum. They'll have the crowd. Their defense is plenty good enough to make Michigan earn it. We've already seen them line up against Ohio State and be physical. So I would not be surprised at all if Penn State gets this way. I'm actually leaning towards Penn State in this football game.
Okay. I'm just about to have to go. Commercial break's coming. Don't you love this? And I'm sure if you're watching any videos, look at the ceiling here that we've got.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Garden. It's really something.
We got apples and snacks over here on the table. We got all kinds of stuff.
Give me a money back guarantee this week.
I got you one.
All right,
Tennessee will score more points on Georgia than anybody has this season.
That's a good one.
Guaranteed. For your money back.
How you like
that's
that?
That's a good one. I like it.
Actually. How you like them?
Apples. How about that?
I think that tempo, the spacing, I think they'll have some success. I don't think they're going to get enough stops to be in the game and be super close, but I think Tennessee is going to score.
And one last thing I want to bring up. We've seen that the landscape is changing in college football in terms of when you make coaching moves. We've seen a number of head coaches fired. We've seen head coaches usually wait till the end of the season unless it's really, really an emergency thing like Ohio State's defense, for a contender to wait till the end of the season to make changes on their staff. Well, they didn't do it. I thought Nebraska did a really smart thing. I like the fact that Trev Albert has restructured the contract. The buyout is less, and he's giving Scott Frost an opportunity to get over the hump. And Scott, whether that was at Trev's urging or his own decision, is changing some of the voices that the players hear. Because what they were doing was a definition of insanity. Same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. They kept losing the same way. They kept losing with lack of aggression on offense. They lose with special teams miscues. They lose with untimely busts. So they're changing the voices, yet giving Scott Frost another chance to do it. Dan Mullen is doing the same thing. Todd Grantham didn't suddenly forget how to coach defense. He's not a bad football coach all of a sudden. It'd gotten stale. He was no longer functional. And so they had to change.
This nightclub is awesome while you're telling us.
Yeah, you like this?
In the background, we got a nice nightclub going. Okay, so here's what I'll say about that.
I know you caught that.
I think I was thinking about the nightclub. Did I miss it?
I just said that while Todd Grantham's still a good football coach and still knows defense, he was no longer functional with the Gators.
Functional is the operative word. I tell you what.
Do I need to tell the people?
Inside joke. I don't know. Did we tell that? Do you feel comfortable saying that?
Nah, I probably shouldn't. But okay. Never mind.
It was a word that Todd used to describe a lot of his players.
But now you just told him.
Well, whatever. Here's the thing. This is going to sound bad. I don't know how else to say it. I would like to see Scott Frost with a different quarterback. I would like to see him. Here's the thing. Nebraska, who are you going to get that's better?
Yeah.
I don't think there's no guarantee to come to your place. It's not an elite job in the country. Like, you got the native son to come home, and I think he's a great offensive coach, and I think he's a good coach. So I think it's smart to stick with him. You got nothing to lose for one more year. Dan Mullen is interesting too. You know, NFL jobs a year ago, you give him a big contract extension, has a huge year. And now, I mean, they look lost. That's crazy how lost they look and how bad they look this season. I mean, that's nuts. But football's also changed, man. The transfer portal changes everything. I mean, you can go fix a lot of deficiencies and you can fix your roster in one season now. I mean, Josh Heupel did a great job. He lost a ton of guys.
20-something guys.
And then gets a ton of guys. Yeah. So, I mean, you can change it around quickly. And it's interesting because we're fire first, but we're not as much so right now, which is good.
Paulo Banchero has a dozen so far for Duke. I'm 3 minutes and 44 seconds of game time until I have to go and hang out with Seth Greenberg and Alfonso Ellis and do halftime of this game. So we've got to run. The next time we see you, we will be wearing bow ties on the Grove in Oxford.
I'll be looking at a video on how to tie.
Me too.
Josh Harder on TV.